and welcome to a new episode of the Computomics podcast. Today, we will be delving deep into practical farm research. And it is my pleasure to welcome not one, but two great guests with experience in the topic. These are Jim Schwartz, Director of Research, Agronomy, and PFR at Bex Hybrids, and Jason Gayheimer, PFR Manager at Bex. Welcome.
Great to be here, Anna. Thanks for having us.
Thanks. Thank you. Thanks, Jim and Jason. I've warned you, we like to start out of left field at this podcast. So I was wondering, what's something your colleagues might not know about you? And Jim, why don't you start us off?
I have a pretty unique icebreaker in that way. Most of my colleagues do not know that a long time ago, I was shot by the daughter of a Boston mob boss. How's that for an icebreaker for
Whoa.
You? So that is a true story. There's a lot of details into it. We were actually hunting, and it's a friend of mine from college. And so, she actually shot me with a shotgun accidentally. No harm, no foul. But that's that's my icebreaker for you, Anna.
Well, way to start us off with a bang.
There you go.
Wow, it's not a competition, but Jason, I mean, how
that
about you?
That one's it's tough to follow that one, but I'm gonna go into it with also another hunting story. So I've also had a hunting incident where I've been actually attacked by a live coyote. So that was a pretty unique experience. I shot a coyote, thought it was dead, and went up to it, you know, poked it like you're supposed to, and it just stood right up and came after me. So that was a good time.
Wow. You certainly live interesting lives. I wonder if that changed the best practice on what you're supposed to do after you shot a coyote. Like, you're not, maybe don't poke them, maybe look at them for a little while and see if they move. Wow. Okay. This is trying to, maybe we hunt for more detail on practical farm research now.
Very nice.
Thank you. I mean, we've mentioned it a couple of times now, Practical Farm Research Program, PFR. What is it? For those who don't know, Jim, why don't you start us off?
So it started in 1964 when Sonny Beck came back to the business from college. He had just completed his master's degree, and he felt as though funding, government funding for university research, third-party unbiased research, those land-grant institutions were not going to continue to receive that necessary funding. Mm-hmm. And he felt like somebody was going to need to step in and fill the vacuum to help create information to help farmers succeed that really wasn't biased, didn't take a viewpoint from the beginning. There are a lot of folks who do research, but they obviously are trying to prove their product works. So that's when he started the program many years ago to say, how can we create a research program that does not really focus on Beck's products? It just focuses on agronomic practices, equipment, any kind of research that a farmer might be interested in that perhaps used to be done by land-grant institutions here in the States, but isn't being funded anymore.
Mm. There are a couple of key things that I'd like to jump in on there. You say it can be any kind of product and maybe not just the first thing you think of. So can you give us maybe an idea of the range that you're covering?
It's a very, and I should have said products and practices. We'll test biological products. We'll test equipment. We're testing equipment from John Deere. They have two new pieces of equipment, ExactShot. We will test fertilizer systems, desiccant studies. We'll create machines to test what's the impact of hail or frost or wind damage, you name it. If it's anything that impacts a farmer in his operation and or it's some emerging technology or product that a farmer might be interested in learning about, we'll test it. Mm-hmm.
In my research for our interview today, I saw that you, in an interview with Hoosiers Today, I think it was, said we get our best ideas from growers. So how does that work? How do you actually like go from your interests and what you think might be interesting to farmers, to growers, to turning it around, having them input you?
Yeah, Jason, you spend a lot of time accumulating those thoughts and ideas. You mind sharing how you do that?
Yeah. So all year long, when we're hosting events or just going out and meeting with farmers, dealers, our sales force, we're asking those questions, right? What questions do they have? What problems do they have on their farm? I mean, that's the biggest one. When guys start talking about, you know, what problems they have, we start thinking about, okay, how can we design a study around that to find a solution for that problem? Goes back to kind of what Jim said with things like hail. Like, okay, what can a farmer do? Anything at all, or just walk away from it and come back and it is what it is. So, so just getting feedback from growers all year long. And, you know, we ask our sales force and our agronomy teams to be very involved in what we do. And so, you know, we solicit some feedback from them. And then we kind of take everything, and we get a lot of companies that also contact us all the time, having interest in us looking at their products or equipment within Practical Farm Research. So we, you know, we have all those things, and we have a committee that sits down in November, December, early January, and really kind of filters through everything and starts designing protocols. And
I'll give you a great example, Adam. We have a lot of meetings, have a lot of conversations with growers. And over the last few years, been a very high level of interest in products that are biological nitrogen fixing products in corn. There's a number of those products on the market, many more emerging. And when we heard, when customers and farmers started asking us, do you have any research on that topic, for instance, we get together and go, probably ought to start doing some research on biological nitrogen fixing products in corn. So it's really, it's very organic where we get a lot of our ideas. They come from the field, and then we say, well, something farmers are interested in, let's learn a little bit more.
That's a great process. So you said your committee gets together kind of in October, November. So how do you collect throughout the year, and then that's where it's decided? Or do you have maybe a secondary system, different, several committee meetings, Jason?
Yeah, so we start, so our book, we get that off to the printer usually around November 7th through the 10th. And so that kind of finishes the year for Practical Farm Research, and we immediately start thinking about next year. So we will start mid-November, and we will have these committee meetings about once a week all the way through mid-January, because, or end of January, because first week of February is when we have our protocols 100% complete. We know what we're doing. And then we have to get everything ready at the site levels, all the different locations that we have, figure out which studies are going to which locations, get everything organized, get stuff ordered, and just get everything ready to hit the field by, you know, at least by April 1st, if not earlier, at some of these locations. So it's a lengthy process, and there's a lot of things that get thrown our way. There's a lot of companies that want us to consider their products. And, you know, unfortunately, we typically say no to more stuff than we are able to say yes to. So we can be very selective on what we feel like we should be testing for the farmer. It's not a pay to play. We're not a third party contract researcher. And so we're very unique in the fact that it is extremely hard to find 100% unbiased replicated agronomic research. And we're one of those very few sources where a farmer can turn to, and we're testing things and showing the results no matter what happens. The companies do not get to see the data and approve the data prior to its publication. That's something when we meet with these companies, we talk through the process. And there's some companies that aren't okay with that. And we don't want to go down that path. That they need to probably be more comfortable paying a third party research company to get their data where, you know, the ones that are confident in their product or just okay with how we handle things. You know, those are the ones that we will keep within the program if we can. So it's very unique in the fact that, you know, like I said, no money ever changes hands. We are 100% unbiased. If a product works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. We try to explain best we can if it did work, why, or if it didn't work, why we think it didn't work. You know, no product works every time. No practice works every time. So we try to find some of the more consistent things and push those through to our program.
Yeah, it's something that struck me when I think it was in the video on PFR, you were quoted as saying, we have a commitment to our farmers that we have to be unique, we have to be fresh, and we have a responsibility to bring new technology and to explain to growers what it is. That to me was really interesting because it seemed to transport that you're really looking to kind of go to the edge, like get the edge to the farmers to make a difference there. And also to have a focus on explaining, not just, you know, putting a few results out there, but really helping the farmers, the growers understand how to implement them. And you've mentioned the book too. So that's another thing for people who do not know, I'm sure in our listeners, there aren't that many who haven't heard of the PFR book, but can you maybe sketch out what is that product that you put out there?
Go ahead, Jason, explain a little bit about the book.
Yeah. So that's what we're working on now. We actually start working on that in usually late July, early August, just all the prep work that goes into it. Cause combines start rolling, you know, over here at most of our locations around the second week of September. And so we have to have all the plots have to be harvested by the end of October as we send that, you know, all the data to the printer there, you know, the first or second week of November. So it's a really quick turnaround time in which we have to harvest and work the data and just get everything ready and get our marketing team to you know, graphically design everything. But the PFR books right now, it's 296 pages of 100% agronomic based research that we conduct. And so the kind of the beginning of the book is what we call PFR proven. So it's a new concept we started 4 or 5 years ago. And really the idea behind it was we had a lot of good products in the past that we had tested and they were getting forgot about, right? There were times that somebody would say, hey, have you ever tested this? It's like, yeah, we have. And it did really well. And they're like, oh, that'd be interesting to see that data. And so, you know, we test so much stuff every year that we wanted to make sure kind of the best of what we've tested over time stayed fresh. Mm-hmm. And we still showed that in some manner. So we came up with what we call PFR proven, and that is any product or practice that we have tested for a minimum of 3 years at multiple locations. And it has to, the multi-location data set every time, every year has to give a positive yield gain. And then the return on investment has to average a positive ROI. So it could have 1 year where, you know, maybe it only gained a bushel, but the ROI was a little bit negative. As long as the 3-year average ROI is positive and the gains yield every single year in that multi-location data set, it becomes what we call PFR proven. And so that product or practice then comes to the top. And when we talk about PFR proven, that's where we tell growers, hey, if you want to try something new on your farm, look through PFR proven, find something that you can easily implement that's not going to cost you a lot of money and time, because those products and practices, not that they're going to work every single time, but they have the highest chance of giving you an ROI.
Right. Well, that also means, if I infer correctly, that you keep testing those PFR proven products and practices. So to keep with that average, you would have to keep field testing those particular products. Is that correct?
Well, so we do them for three. Sometimes it's a minimum of 3 years, right? So if we decide that, you know, we need some more data on whatever this is, right? If it has to do with nitrogen, a lot of times we'll do a few more years because Mother Nature and weather patterns dictate a lot of things when it comes to nitrogen and those type of things. So it just depends. And there's some things we test for 3 years and that's enough data. We're good with it. And we stop there. So that's another benefit of no money changing hands. There's no obligations. Mm-hmm. We decide what we want to test. We decide how long we want to test it. If we test a product 1 year and it doesn't do very well, it doesn't mean it's a bad product, but you know, we may move forward with other things that we want to look at and not test that for year two. So there's never a longevity commitment on how long we're going to test somebody's product. Or like I said, that's the only investment companies have when we test their products. It's just ensuring that we get products sent to our locations in time for the trials, right? So we ask them to send us product by April 1st and we request those products early March. So there's plenty of time and it's only 2, 3, 4 acres worth of product to every location. So there's really no investment in the companies to be part of our program. But at the end of the day,
potentially great return, right?
Great could be great return, could be not so great return, right? It's risk reward right there for them. So,
I would argue that even if like, if it was a bad result, like, you know, as a first instance, it's still valuable because you have great independent results and, you know, you got to work on your product. Otherwise it's not going to stay on the market for very long, is it?
Yeah. And usually I agree with you on that because like I go back to the part of we're very selective on what we can, because we get so many things, we can be selective on what we want to put in the program versus not. So a lot of times we do probably test things that have a higher chance of success just because we can be picky on what we bring in the program. If two companies have similar products, but one has a lot They've got a lot more third-party data already on their product. We've heard good things about their product, whether that's out in the field from growers or whatever. You know, mm-hmm. we're probably going to bring that one forward versus the other one that maybe they're just, it's brand new. We haven't heard anything with it on it, or there isn't a lot of results yet with it. So, so a lot of times we have there's probably a higher success rate with a lot of the stuff we test just because we are very, very selective and as we can be with what we bring in the program. We want to try to find things that can help farmers succeed.
There, I will also say, though, Anna, there are, you know, we have a lot of studies we'll look at and go, well, you know, the weather is changing. It's probably a good idea not to just accept our assumptions that we tested 4 or 5 or 6 years ago. So oftentimes we will reinitiate a study because we think, oh, maybe the weather is changing how it impacts those results. We also have studies. We have seed treatment studies that have run 17 years. We have the longest running tillage and rotation study in the state of Indiana. So there are studies that are planting date studies. We believe that hybrids and varieties change in relation to planting dates. We've done those for 20 plus years, and we'll continue to do those kinds of studies as well. So some are short term, some are longer term studies. But the other thing is, you mentioned the book, and we print and mail close to 60,000 of those books out for free to growers. Wow. So if a product works, it's really good. And if a product doesn't work, it can be pretty damaging for a company if it doesn't work. And so that's the hesitancy that Jason mentioned. You're exposed if your product doesn't work. Now, to Jason's point, we always try to explain, here's why we think we see the results. When we live and operate in a biological world impacted by the weather and environment, you know, I've always said it's probably more surprising to me when a product is consistent than when it's not. But we always try to explain the why, because that, frankly, most growers out there would tell you, I just want to know why. Tell me why something might work or why something might not work. And they're accepting of that to a certain degree.
Yeah, that makes total sense. You've mentioned so many examples now and quite a big range too. How many studies do you have going in any given year?
Jason, share a little bit about, break it out by crop and share with her, maybe even by location, what an average location might look like.
Yeah. So on average, every year we have around just a little over 100 different studies total. So that's 100 different actual protocols, different studies. Usually it's about a 60-40 ratio, 60% are corn studies, 40% are soybeans. It just seems like there's always a few more things on corn that trip our trigger, I guess, than what on soybeans. So a little heavy on corn there. We also do corn silage research. We're going to be dabbling into some other crops, like potentially sorghum research and some of those things here in the future as well. But predominantly corn, soybeans. We also have a decent amount of replicated data on wheat over the years as well. So, but we also have right now, we've got 7 PFR locations where we do this research. So out of all those 100, 90% of them are multi-location, right? There are a few site-specific studies that are only at one location, but we have most of our studies are replicated at 3 to 5 different locations. And so right now we have 7, and we're getting ready to open 2 more in the course of the next 2 years. So we'll be at 9, and then, you know, we'll continue to grow from there probably. So we've really ramped up not only what we do in practical farm research, but where we do it.
I was about to say that because I think I'd read 6. So I was like, oh, 7, there's one more now. It's growing. And I guess makes sense with this many products and practices to test.
It is. And we also, so we try to represent geographically the area in which we market, but we're very careful to represent different soil types, different growing environments. So we're pretty cognizant of how and where we test so that we're representing the broadest swath of growing conditions, environments, soil types. And then you'll see oftentimes we'll aggregate our data in such a way to say, okay, here's maybe some of the prairie soils, or look at the data on the poorly drained soils. So we're very, very careful as we select our sites and our locations and our geography to make sure we're balancing all those parameters out to the best of our ability.
What are those sites? I mean, I saw the book a little bit. I saw Kentucky, I think, Illinois, maybe. Mm-hmm. Yep. Maybe give us a quick overview. Where can we find those sites?
Sure. So starting in the east, we have one in London, Ohio, so south central Ohio, Henderson, Kentucky, which is northwest Kentucky, here in Atlanta, Indiana. We have two in Illinois, one at Effingham and one at El Paso. So the Effingham location, to what I previously discussed, that's more of a heavy, poorly drained clay soil. The El Paso location is very much a high organic matter, well-drained prairie soil. We also have a location in Colfax, Iowa. We have a newly opened location this past August in Goner, Nebraska. So east central Nebraska, kind of right on the border of where you would irrigate and not irrigate. We have a location in Gibbon, Minnesota. We are building a new one in Olivia, Minnesota. And then we're also in the process of building a new one in Salina, Kansas. Then we also have a couple locations that we call them cooperator locations. We have close relationships with folks that we trust to operate and to affect our protocols correctly. And so we have a location in Wisconsin, one in the Delta, so down in the Delta of the United States. So those are locations we'll utilize. They're smaller. They're not staffed by BEX personnel, but those are all different. And then again, we'll continue to look at other locations, say, we don't have anything in Michigan. Is there an opportunity in Michigan? And we'll look at all those opportunities. But yeah, seven BEX-owned sites, two more coming online, and then a couple cooperator locations as well. So it gives us a broad footprint. Eventually, that we'll probably end up around 10, but it could be more.
Yeah, it sounds like there's a lot of interest. You've mentioned a couple of times how hard it is to select, or how selective you are and have to be in your work. I'm also thinking of a quote again from one of the videos I watched before this interview. One of your colleagues said, I get to work for a place where the extent to which you can influence farmers' livelihood is really only limited by your imagination. And that really struck me. I was like, yeah, you got to be, it's about taking input, but also you got to be creative. How do you design a study to really, you know, get the results that you need to create impactful results for farmers to succeed? And also focusing on livelihood, I feel like, is different than just saying like, okay, let's try and make the crops more effective, right? It has a bigger view.
I'll give you a great example. Here recently, we sat down and we said, there are a lot of decisions that growers make in season. We've not really sat down and said, let's be very intentional about thinking about the things that impact a grower during the growing season, and then how might he react to those. Those are things that folks, you know, you think about a lot of the research, oh, it'll be soil fertility research, or it'll be equipment research, and that's all well and good. Where the rubber hits the road for a lot of growers is, I've just experienced a hailstorm. What do I do? Do I spray a fungicide? Do I add an additional foliar nutritional product to help me out? Oh my goodness, I just experienced a frost. Should I mow that crop off? Should I replant? I have a thin stand of beans. What do I do? Do I fill it in? Do I tear it up? We have to, to your point, the nice thing about BEX, I would say, is that many, many, many of the folks that work here farm. Okay, they farm on their own. They have their own small farms. So they live it daily. And that daily experience of working on a farm also allows them to think creatively about, and knowing what we do, they'll go, man, I wonder what happens if X happens during the growing season. How might we react to improve the outcome? That would be a great PFR study. So that the fact that a lot of our folks understand that dynamic, it allows them to think very creatively. I can tell you, Anna, Jason is probably very scared to come into my office because I have a whiteboard, and my whiteboard has this long list of crazy ideas. And I'll be thinking or have a conversation, I'll get up and write an idea on my whiteboard. A lot of them are really crazy ideas, but that's the fun of it, to say, how do we think differently about what's going on anyone's individual farm to design or create a study that people haven't thought of before that will help them succeed? That's really our job. In the end, our job is to help a farmer succeed. Our job is not, and that's Sonny Beck's directive to us as well, is to say, don't worry about whether or not what you do helps sell seed. What I want you to worry about is whether or not what you do helps a farmer succeed.
I have one last question to both of you, but I feel like you've already started to answer it, is what do you love most about your job? Jason, I'm going to throw it to you first.
I love this question. We get this all the time. It's the culture. It's the freedom to operate at Beck's. Jim hit on a little bit with, you know, when we make decisions, the first filter we go through is, will this help a farmer succeed? It's not, how does this impact Beck's bottom line? Is this in the budget? It's not the very first filter when we make decisions, especially in practical farm research, that filters, does this help a farmer succeed? If the answer is yes, we typically do it and figure out how to make it work, right? No matter what that takes. And so it's the freedom to operate, the freedom to do all these things to help farmers succeed and just work with great people all the time, coming to work, not feeling like it is work, enjoying what you do. It's different at Beck's, and anybody that has been around Beck's or knows Beck's a little bit, they that statement is real. The culture here and how we treat employees, the Beck family look at us as the Beck family of employees, not just numbers. So it's refreshing to come to a place that, you know, care about each and every one of us and, you know, through thick and thin, have our back. So.
Yeah, I echo those comments. One of the things that I really enjoy is the ability to be authentic here and be who you are, and you don't have to act like someone you're not or pretend to be something you're not. The ability to think very creatively and differently. Anna, when I wake up in the morning, I sit there and go, what can I do today that might help a farmer succeed? Part of what's very important for the Beck family, and frankly, part of what attracts us to working with companies like Computomics, is our ability to remain independent, to have the scale and scope, to do the things that give us the leverage as we negotiate with our partners, but also to maintain an independent company that is focused on the farmer. In this era of consolidation, heck, every era goes through consolidation, but there's a lot of large-scale consolidation. As you can imagine, the Beck family has been approached many, many times about selling, and they have no interest in that, because they feel so strongly that someone or some entity has to be there focused on the farmer. And that's frankly a big reason why practical farm research exists and will continue to exist in the future.
I feel like we started this podcast with two bangs and we finished it with two bangs. Thank you so much, you two, for your time, for giving us such a great insight into your work, into your motivations. And we will obviously link to PFR, to some info in the show notes. And yeah, I hope to have you back sometime, maybe in the future, and talk. Once you've had that 10th location, maybe we can talk some more.
We'd love it. Thank you very much for having us, Anna. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for listening in today. Want to learn more? Then check out our show notes and more info on computomics.com. If you have questions or want to propose a next guest, please reach out to us at podcast@computomics.com.